Ken Murray is our special guest this week on Dog Show Tips with Will Alexander, brought to you by Canine Chronicle TV and ProPlan, nutrition that performs. Hey, everybody, we're here today with Ken Murray. Hi, Ken, how are you?
Hi, Will, good to see you.
Good to see you. Glad you could join us. I'm going to get right into it. Tell me how you got involved in dogs, Ken.
Well, my father owned an Irish setter when I was born. And I think when I was about two, my father got transferred. I was born in Connecticut. When I was about two, my father's business was transferred to Texas. And he left that Irish setter with his mother up in Connecticut, but we'd take family vacations up there, and I just loved that dog. And when I got to be, 10 or 11, I just was extremely interested. I wanted a new dog. I had had a dachshund as a pet, and my father had a man that worked for him named George Plummer. He was a famous dachshund breeder. At that time, he was also a licensed judge. He did the hound group, and he had dachshunds, and he had whippets and greyhounds also. And he was really influential in getting my father to take me to shows. The first dog show I went to was March of 1959 at the Dallas State Fair, the Texas State Fair, the Texas Kennel Club show.
How old were you then?
Well, I would have been 11, about 11. I showed a Westie for this man's daughter who came in. She had a Westie, and I showed it for her. But I was, by then I was really interested in Irish setters. And, you know, Jane Forsyth was there at that show with George Alston working for her.
Oh, wow.
In 1959. And they had the famous Trivelda Sally, or Hartshorn Sally Anna Trivelda.
Okay.
Was there. I saw her. And I think there was only two Irish setters entered in the whole dog show. They were both bitches. One was Hartshorn Sally Anna Trivelda. Another one was another famous bitch, or became famous as a producer, Endomain Yours Truly. So anyway, that made I saw those two bitches. I thought they were beautiful, and I just decided that I wanted to get an Irish setter, but I didn't have anybody guiding me or mentoring me, and I saw where there was a litter right around Dallas, and I bought my first Irish setter for $50, a bitch, and raised her up, and I entered her at the Texas Kennel Club in 1961 and showed her there in the novice bitch class. The judge was Sadie Edmonston. You probably never heard of her, but she was the first woman all-breed judge. And anyway, I went winner's bitch and best of winners and best opposite sex over specials bitch, and I was hooked. At that same dog show, I found a premium list for some shows in Arkansas. And I told my father, I said, you gotta take me to these shows up here in Arkansas. I had opened up. It's the same judge doing Irish setters. So I entered the dog show, and my father drove me up there. And I got up there, and I opened the catalog. And there was only one other Irish setter besides mine. And I remembered seeing this same bitch. Her name was Warfwood's Valentine, owned by a man named Fred Poole. And she had been at the show in Dallas, and I had already beaten her. But I noticed something different all of a sudden. On her name, there was, in parentheses, E. Bracey.
Oh.
Anyway, I went second out of two real quick. But anyway, at that show was the first time I ever showed in junior handling or whatever. I can't remember. Children's handling classes, they called it in those days. And Ed Bracey was the judge.
Oh, wow.
And I remember I was standing outside the ring waiting to go in, and there was a girl with an English setter. And I could tell that girl knew what she was doing. So I just went in the ring and I copied her. Whatever she did, I did. And I went first and she went second. Anyway, that was my start at my first two dog shows.
When did you decide that this is what you wanted to do?
What'd you say?
When did you decide that this is what you wanted to do?
Probably about 1967 or so. I was a sophomore in college. I was going to a school, Stephen F. Austin in Nacogdoches, Texas. And I really wasn't doing anything except staying out of the draft or staying out of Vietnam, basically. And I missed going to dog shows and wanted to get back to it. So I quit after my second year and I moved back to Dallas to my parents' home because I knew I could keep dogs there, and just went to a local college and started going to dog shows. And I got some nice Irish setters from Lucy Jane Myers. She sent me dogs to show, and Springers for Vivian Diffendaffer was her name. She was a real prominent Springer breeder in that area back in those days. I was out in West Texas showing some dogs, and I called home, and my mother said, "There's a Mr. Cooper trying to get a hold of you." And I knew what it was all about. Clay Cody actually got me the job working for Dick Cooper. That's a whole other story that I just skipped over. But so anyway, I had another good friend that was a judge. His name was Harold Bishop. He had been a handler. You know who he was, right?
I recognize that name, yeah.
And so I walked over to his ring, and I told him, I said, Dick Cooper's offering me a job. And he said, "Well, is this what you want to do? Do you want to be a dog handler?" And I said, "Yeah." He said, "Then don't think twice. Just go." So I drove home, packed my clothes, and quit school and drove to Chicago and been here ever since.
What year was that? What can you tell me about
when Dick? I first went to work for Dick, it was 1969. End of 69. I worked for him. I quit in 79. I think I was 20 to 30. I spent all my 20s going to dog shows with Dick Cooper.
So that was Dick and Ruth, obviously.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Well, can
Ruth
you tell
was
me
very
about
influential in my career, but teaching me. I learned more about dogs from her probably than anybody, just talking to her all the time. Dick Cooper, Ruth Cooper. I was so lucky to be around some of the greatest dog people that ever lived. Larry Downey, used to go over to Larry and Alice's house a lot, hang out with Clay, talk about dogs, and then used to be with George Ward every week for years and years.
Wow.
Jack Funk, he was a great dog man. So, I mean, those were some of the most prominent handlers of all time, and they were all lived right in the area where I lived.
Well, can you just tell me some things about when you were working for Dick and Ruth?
Say that once more for me.
Maybe give me some stories about when you were working for Dick and Ruth. What was it like?
Well, I think I came to work for Dick in right after Christmas. It was in 1969, so it was just about 1970. I didn't go to shows for a month or two, because he had another guy, Harry Hayes, actually was going to shows with him. I just stayed and worked in the kennel, and then finally Harry Hayes moved out east to go to work for Poolford Kennels, the job that Peter Green had at one time. And so then I started going to shows, and it was kind of funny, my relationship with Ruth, I don't think she even knew my name for about 6 months, or maybe the following year. Ruth didn't travel with us, but she would always, she'd come to a lot of the shows. And one time it was at Detroit Kennel Club. It was at, there used to be a party after the show. And I remember Ruth was there holding court, had people all standing around her while she was telling the story. He was telling a story about Dick Cooper's father showing a famous Irish setter that he did a lot of winning with, Clegg Light of Aragon. And he said, whoever the judge was that was doing the breed had a friend that had a pointer that had a good shot at winning the group. And the only dog that could screw up this pointer's chances of winning the group was this Irish setter, Clegg Light. So he put in best odds at sex to a puppy bitch that Hollis Wilson's wife was showing. And Ruth is telling the story. And all of a sudden she says, but for the life of me, I can't remember the name of that bitch. And I piped up with Endomain Sarah Jane. And from that day on, Ruth couldn't believe I knew that. We were best of friends for many years. She was very, she did a lot for me, helped me out when I went on my own. And she was a good friend. And she was probably as knowledgeable a person as you're ever going to find.
Yeah.
One time she was in a nursing home. She had injured herself somehow. I can't remember what. But she sent me up to her house to get her checkbook out of her drawer in her desk. And so I'm looking for her checkbook. And here were all these letters that Billy Kendrick had written her. She saved every letter. And I just opened one, and I was starting to read one of them, and it was like two paragraphs long about a class of German short hair pointer bitches or something.
Wow.
But they used to talk all the time. And of course, Annie Clark was one of her very best friends. So I was, I was just fortunate enough to be around some of the best dog people of all time when I was young, starting out.
Tell me about, it sounds like you've known Clay your whole dog life too.
Well, we met on the Texas circuit in, I think it was 1968. I was working for Walt Schellenberger on that circuit.
Oh, wow.
And we were all through showing dogs. It was probably like noon or something. And I was just standing around, and Clay came up to me and asked me if I wouldn't help him blow dry schnauzer legs. And I said, yeah, sure, I'll help you. And so now we started talking and everything. And he said, you want to go to a party tonight? And I said, yeah, sure. So he takes me to this party. It was at Margie Tranchin's house. Margie Tranchin was Maxine Beam's number one poodle client.
Okay.
And she had a fabulous mansion somewhere in Dallas. And so we went there, and we ended up spending the whole night sitting on the stairs talking to Annie Clark.
Oh, wow.
And I remember we had a great time, just the three of us talking there, drinking. And at that same party, though, Rudy Towski was there at that party. Mm-hmm. Doug Boondock, a guy that used to show corgis for the Pillsbury's.
Wow.
I don't know, some really great dog people. It's so many years ago, it's hard to remember it all, but I was there.
You seem to recall a lot of names popping up. You're pretty good at that, though.
Jeez. Yeah. But Clay and I got to be good friends, and we've been friends to this day, close friends. And I told him that I wanted a job like he had working for Larry. I mean, Larry Downey was a great person to work for. He was a fabulous dog person. Too bad we lost him at such a young age. He had only just started judging when he got stomach cancer, I think it was, that killed him. But so many great dog people came from Larry Downey. I mean, Stan Flowers and Brian and Cindy Meyer and Clay and that Renette Berggren, I remember.
Wow.
She's an Irish setter breeder. You know who she is from Colorado?
She used to work.
He kept Blaney Wood Country Squire, was famous Irish setter Larry. Actually, he stole the dog from Dick.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Dick, a lady named Shirley Ford owned the dog. She brought him to the Chagrin Valley Dog Show. That was a big fancy show in Ohio. And it was on a polo field. He was in the open dog class, wanted Dick to finish him. So he showed him, he went best in show with him. Under Hayden Martin. Remember Hayden Martin?
Oh, yeah.
So Dick told this lady, he said, well, I got a client that'll pay for, we'll buy him from you and campaign him, but he's in Europe right now. He won't be back for a few weeks. So Larry had this woman, Marion Darling, fly in from California. The two of them drove up to this lady's house, put $3,000 cash on the table, and walked out with the dog.
Jeez.
Anyway, but when, it was probably about 10 months later that Dick got Salolin's Aristocrat, so it really didn't matter.
Yeah, there you go. Things happen for a reason. So what? Tell me about were you working for Dick all through Aristo's career then?
No, I wasn't there. That was before me. I think Aristocrat was campaigned in 66, 6, and 67.
Okay.
Right before me, and he had Salolin's Aristocrat, who at that time was the top winning dog of all time. That dog to this day, I remember Melbourne Downing used to preach that he wanted the ratings to be like a batting average. And Salolin's Aristocrat was the first dog to win 45 best in shows in 1 year. And if he only went to 73 dog shows.
Wow.
And I mean, Dick never, they used to call him three state Dick. I mean, we only went to stayed in the same area, never went out of, I mean, it was pretty rare that we would go to Florida every year for the Florida circuit. But other than that, we just stayed in our own area. But right before me, he had Light Brigade, Salolin's Aristocrat, and then the famous Labrador Shamrock Acres Light Brigade, who became the top winning Labrador of all time. And Botch John Paul, the famous American Foxhound, who was the greatest winning Foxhound of all time. All those records have been beaten nowadays, but they stood for many years.
Yeah.
And when I came to work for him, we were showing a Springer, Salolin's Colonel's Overlord was his name. And, I remember the first dog show I went to with Dick. It was at Tumwa, Iowa. And he loses the sporting group. And then he had a foxhound in his win. And when he loses the hound group, I'm thinking, boy, this is going to be a bad day. And then he wins the non-sporting group and the working group both. So the first show I went to with him, I got to show a dog, a Dalmatian, for best in show.
When were you there for a chance for the Irish Setter?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I had a lot to do with that dog. We were showing a special for Dr. Helferty, Kelly Shannon O'Deek.
I remember that dog, yeah.
And Dick hated the dog. He didn't think much of the dog. The dog had a horrible head planes, and he was kind of a lazy dog with Dick. And we were at some show, I think it was in Ohio. And he came back to the crates, and I said, "Did you win the breed?" And he said, "Yeah." He said, "But there was another dog there, looked pretty good." He said, Phil Marsh did Irish Setters, and he gave Dick Best of Breed. And when he handed him the Best of Breed ribbon, he said, you ought to try to get this other dog that you just beat. He's a hell of a lot better than this thing. The dog was being handled by Hugh Rumbaugh, who was just, of course, destroying the dog.
He was the owner.
He was the owner. Yeah, right. And, anyway, Dick's telling me about this. I said, let's go look at him. I want to see him. So we did. We went and found him. And of course, Dick didn't tell me that he had shown for the Rumbaughs, 25 years earlier or something. So he knew him really well. So I don't know. I can't remember how it all went about. But finally, Hugh Rumbaugh, he wanted Dick to show that dog. And eventually we talked Dr. Helferty into paying for Chance for Aaron RD. And then we thought he would just quit with Kelly. So then he says, what about Kelly? I want to keep showing Kelly. So we told him to send the dog out to Corky Broom just to get the dog out of there. Well, he didn't want to do that, so he ends up giving the dog to Tommy Glassford. Okay. So then we had to compete against him. Of course, Tommy put a choke chain on him and got him flying around the ring, something Dick wouldn't do. He used to beat us once in a while, but I don't know. Chance went on to he won 36 best in shows, which is still a record to this day. And I don't think any male Irish setter.
Yeah, I think for males it is still, yeah.
Yeah, still holds the record. We showed him, I think we showed him for 4 years or something like that. I don't think he ever won more than 9 best in shows in 1 year. whatever.
Did you show him?
Oh, yeah, I won my first best in show with him. Oh, cool. Yeah, at Waukesha one summer. Either he went to England or he was sick or something. I can't remember. But my first wife, Cindy, and I, we showed all the dogs there. And I remember I won the sporting group the first day with a Springer that ended up in Canada, a dog called Salolin's Vanguard. I got beaten Irish setters. Jack Funk beat me with a Irish setter he was showing. And then Maurice Baker was the group judge. I won a group with Salolin's Vanguard. And then the next day I went best in show with Aaron R.D. under Winnie Heckman.
That dog ended up down east in Canada.
Huh?
I want to say that Vanguard dog ended up down east in Canada. For some reason, it rings a bell. He was down in the eastern area being shown.
We had our choice between Salolin's Vanguard or Salolin's Classic. And Vanguard was a little off mentally. So anyway, we tried to show him for a while, but he wouldn't show for Dick. I could get him to show for me, but he was, because I spent a lot of time playing with him and working with him and everything. But anyway, he just wasn't going to make it as a great show dog. So we took Salolin's Classic, who was a great show dog. And he was good for at least 50-something best in shows.
Yeah.
Wow. I think he was the top sporting dog 2 years in a row. And then I don't know whether a year went by in between. And then we came out with Salolin's Hallmark, and he was the number one sporting dog for 2 years in a row. Yeah. And he won another 50 best in shows. He was a son of Classics. Didn't even resemble him in any way. A much typier type of Springer Hallmark was than Classic. But anyway, they were both a lot of fun, and had a lot of success with them.
Would you say Irish setters are your favorite breed, though, Kenny?
Yeah, that's what I started out with. Sure, yeah.
What are some of your favorite Irish setters? I know a story about you had a bachelor boy as a young dog, and in Canada he became very famous. He won 7
yeah.
shows up.
Well, it was when I was showing Irish setters for Lucy Jane. She sent me the dog. She was going to give me the dog if I wanted him. But anyway, I started showing him, and he was kind of real spooky when I got him. I don't think he had been out of her kennel as a puppy at all, and he was about 13 months old. But I worked with him, and he became a really good show dog. I finished him real easy, and he started placing in groups, and I was having fun with him. And then she wanted to give me the dog, and I was thinking I was going to get drafted because that was the height of the Vietnam era. And so I told her I'd better send the dog back to her because she told me she had an offer to buy him from the Threlkelds. And so I sent him back to her. But he was a beautiful dog. I remember, yeah, I think he won about 75 best in shows out in eastern Canada, Nova Scotia. Is that where he was shown? So,
yeah. At the bigger shows, he might show up, but we didn't see him much. So.
But the year during the years I worked for Dick, they drove down to show me the dog and see him. Yeah, they were wonderful people.
Oh yeah, the Colonel, yeah, for sure. Yeah. And there was always a big deal when they arrived at the show. I guess they had the car was basically Jeffrey's car, and they had it made for the back seat was Jeffrey's crate, basically. So. He'd pull up and Jeffrey'd be in the back seat made just for him.
That's kind of like the guy that showed Rock Falls Colonel. Sounds like the same story. I remember that was before me, but I remember Dick Cooper telling me about Bill Holt. He said they say Rock Falls Colonel was owner handler, but don't kid yourself. This guy was no just owner handler. He knew what he was doing. He was a sharp guy. Remember he said he'd get to a dog show and he'd go up. He'd find the area where all the club members were, and he'd go up to them and say, "I just want you folks to know this is one of the nicest dog shows I've ever been to, and what a great building you have here," and on. He said, by the time he got in for Best in Show, all those people would be screaming and clapping for it.
Do you have a favorite dog that you showed, Ken, or owned?
Oh, well, I mean, obviously the Gordon Setter was the dog I did the most winning with. Yeah. But I don't know, an American Foxhound that I did a lot of winning with, Cody. His name was Pokes Flashback. I think he won about 15 Best in Shows and over 100 group first. He was a cute dog, a lot of fun to show.
Yeah.
And then the English Setter Bitch that I made, the greatest winning English Setter Bitch of all time, Fever. She was like push button show dog. I mean, she never did anything wrong. Always gave 100%. She was a lot of fun. And the people that owned her, the Mateses and the Mateses and the Novaks, they were wonderful to show for. I mean, Judy Mates and her husband Dave, they're just fabulous people.
Oh, yeah, sure they are. And
so that was a lot of fun.
And dogs like that make us look good, you know. They're fun to show like that.
Right.
Have any advice for young handlers, Ken?
Yeah, get a good accountant. Get a good accountant. Learn how to... I don't know. I used to always say one of the best assets a handler can have is to know a whole lot about the breeds they're showing, for one thing. You know, you look pretty stupid getting upset, getting beat with a dog that's not any good to begin with.
Exactly.
And learn how to make a living doing it, not running around trying to win best in shows everywhere. Stay in an area that you're known, you know. And that's how you build a business. You build, get more and more clients by going to the same dog shows every year. At least that's the way it was for me.
And my philosophy as well. I agree with
all
that.
The years I worked for Dick Cooper, he'd show up on the days that it was time to do entries. And every week we had three different choices of directions to go to. And the determining factor where we went is where we'd show the most dogs to make the most money.
Yeah.
You know, if you're going to do this to try to make a living, you better be smart about it.
Exactly.
And it's not an easy business.
That's for sure. And what you did working for Dick and Ruth for 10 years, that's unheard of now for people apprenticing that long. And I think that's a...
But, it entailed me... The first year I worked, I think I quit working for Dick in June of 79, and so I went on my own like in July, and I think I grossed $70,000 from July to December, which was a fabulous amount of money in those days and I was instantly able to win groups and best in shows, had great strings of dogs. I mean, it was... But, you know, somebody says, "Oh, yeah, like you're an overnight success." Yeah, right. Well, I was picking up dog crap for 10 years.
You paid your dues. You became an extension of Dick for so long. And then when you're on your own.
Yeah.
It was a great asset. The kids these days just don't do that. Like Adam worked with me for like 6 or 7 years. And that was a long time. But
for who? Who'd you work for?
No, Adam. When Adam worked for me, he worked for me.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, right. Yeah, well, it paid off for him. Great success. Yeah.
You don't see that very often anymore where the new handlers work that long for one person. You don't have to one person. But I think it's important that they get their feet wet, not just buy a truck and off they go.
Right.
You have any superstitions at dog shows?
No, I really don't. Never did. Oh. I'm not the least bit superstitious about anything.
Touch wood, right? Yeah. Do you have any skills or talents that we don't know about, Ken?
No, I don't. I really don't. Dogs, that's all my whole life has never been anything but dog shows.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's good or bad, but I basically spent my whole life at dog shows.
Me too. Who do you miss most in dog shows now? Anybody from the past that you miss the most?
Well, obviously, you know, people like Dick Cooper and George Ward and Larry Downey, Jack Funk. Those were, you know, I love those guys. Spent a lot of time with them. But also, like, Bob LaRoche was a really good friend of mine. I miss Bob a lot. We used to travel together and had a lot of fun, you know. I missed him.
Ray Handler.
So that's all I can think of.
What do you think about the current judging process?
Well, I've been through about four of them now. I think I applied. I started in 2006, and then we had that 60 points thing. I thought that was the most ridiculous. That was a mess. And I don't know that I've been through. I can think of three different types of systems they've had, but I think the one right now, the current one, it's good for me. It makes it easier, but it also is probably easy for people who really don't have the background or knowledge to exceed also, to move along. Yeah. I mean, it would be better if you could have two or three people just really investigate the people that are applying and go and see, you know, watch them judge something. You know, there could be a better system, but it costs money, and you've always, you know, people, they want an even playing field for everybody, and that's what it's boiled down to. So I don't know. The current system is okay. I don't think it's bad.
You're working. We're working on a system up here where it's going to be more of a personal interview with a panel of all breed judges. They would interview you and get a feel for you that way. I like that human aspect of it, because like you said, there's so many people that can pass a test that can't actually put it into working.
Yeah, right. But I just, since I've been judging the last few years, met some young people that are excellent judges coming along. Really, and I had never heard of them, because they were, like, there's this one guy, he was just into collies, but now he's got several groups, and I was really impressed with his judging. There's also, I don't know, there's several women that, you know, that are young, just maybe not young, but new to the judging thing, that have impressed me as being really good.
Well, for sure. There's always going to be those people out there that take it seriously and then grew up in the sport.
Yeah.
Is there a dog that you wished you could have owned or shown out there?
Well, there's a lot of them that, you know, I thought were great dogs that I didn't have anything to do with, like Bill McFadden's Kerry Blue and Jimmy's German Shepherd Bitch, Salomon's Aristocrat. Yeah, I don't know. Those are the ones that come to mind.
What do you think Dick and Ruth would think of the dog shows today?
I don't know. It's totally different, isn't it? It's really, yeah. Things have really changed. The sad part is some of the breeds that we used to have big entries in, and now they're just gone. I mean, every year at Chicago International, you'd have 100 Irish setters. I mean, God, now you're lucky if you have 10. But I guess other breeds, you know, that
didn't get big entries in those days are probably bigger now, like Welch Springers or Clumbers. I mean, you used to go for years where you wouldn't even see wire hair pointing Griffons. God, there were many years you never even saw one. And now that's gotten to be a popular breed. Out in California, they get great big entries of them.
And that must go in cycles then with the popularity.
Yeah, all right. Yeah.
You go back and talk to the 20-year-old Kenny Murray. What would you tell him?
Don't smoke. Don't drink. Got a good accountant.
That's good, Ken. All right, man. I appreciate it. Do you have anything you want to add before we close?
Oh, I don't know. I'm having a lot of fun judging. I really enjoy that.
You can tell that. When you watch you judge, you can tell you enjoy it. So.
Yeah, I enjoy it. I just, during this, this is my grandson, Ferris.
Hi, Ferris. He's like, what's going on?
Anyway. All right, well.
Ferris keeps you busy. All right, Ken, I appreciate your time.
All right. See you, well. Take care.
Good to talk to you, and take care of yourself. Right. I'll see you somewhere.
Again, I'd like to thank Ken for inviting us into his home and young Ferris as well. I hope you all enjoyed that. If you like what you see here, please press that like, share, and subscribe button. Don't forget to press the notification bell. And if you want to send me any messages or give me some ideas, you can reach me at dogshowtips@gmail.com. Or if you just want to find out what's happening in my world, just go to willalexander.net. Until next week.